1, 2, 3, 4.
That's a microphone.
Open your coffee again.
That's mine. I cannot function without it.
Is it possible to put on the floor maybe instead?
It is possible. Just give me 1 second because this is not the second to be discussed.
I just want you guys to know.
I'm plugging you intentionally.
To quote.
Who the hell is this guy?
Jones told me something we're starting here around 2. How's it going, man?
Good. We're doing.
Come on in, Bernie.
So what is the thing that's being discussed?
We're trying to get you elected next
year. We're trying to get you on the highest brow programming that hackers have ever produced.
That's a pretty low bar.
Wait, say that again.
Speaking of low bar, watch out behind you because I got a large seltzer there. Let's get that over here. We don't need a second spill.
Oh, there was a first spill?
Yes. I've donated my shirt to the cause. I'll tell you what.
At least
you stopped it up with your shirt?
At least it masked the farts.
But here's the best part. If you are seeing this on webcam right now, for a nice charitable donation starting at $100 for this smelly t-shirt, somebody's fetish, I'm sure, we'll be able to send you the wet t-shirt contest loser.
Yep. For a generous donation to Rhea Stetler for...
It only counts if you're wearing it when it's wet.
I could wear it when it's wet.
We'll accept American dollars, euros, Bitcoin, and New York City coin.
Have you forgotten the rubles?
You will be able to get a shirt that has a combination of coffee and Neo sweat in the most intimate areas. Yes, you will be able to own that. Right, Murdoch?
Right. And for the record, it's only...
Is there a USB charger in the house?
There are several USB chargers in the house. Actually, it's over by the disinformation desk.
What type of USB?
Standard. Not USB-C.
Micro USB.
I can do. Over by disinformation desk.
All right. Yeah.
Disinformation desk.
Is there one right here? Where's
the rest? Ask for
Wait, is the disinformation desk here also?
Disinformation desk is everywhere, all the time.
Oh, I didn't realize it was at other conferences. Oh, shucks.
Yeah, it's sort of conference of its own. It's the bullshit conference.
Yeah, I love it. That's why I always like to do it. That's why.
Yeah, so bullshit conference we are. Okay, let's see if I can actually get on to...
I gotta tweet this. Oh, wait, I should tweet the other images first.
Oh, no. I haven't been on IRC so long.
So, what's the topic of the night?
Whatever you feel like is the right answer.
Oh, I'm going to be ranting about half diamonds and people using the wrong profile half diamonds for sure. So, that's all I know I'm doing.
I just lost the hacker spelling bee.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I got through most of the... There was an elimination, and I got through most of the people before I got eliminated. And I spelled it correctly, but...
Capitalization counts?
Yeah, the capitalization. It was putty, and I just wasn't thinking. I just spurted out.
All lowercase,
my mind is in the gutter.
Oh, yes.
P-U-T-T-Y.
Capital P, capital T, capital T, capital Y. Yeah. And then they wonder why it is we can't spell anymore.
Well, I mean, I should have even known from the etymology that... You know, the TTY meant teletype, and I wasn't thinking.
One of these days they're going to realize it's P-U-T-T-D, actually, or T-D-D, or...
Yeah, the very first hope I gave a talk about TTYs and TDDs.
Oh, in that case, you'll be hanging around a little bit later, I'm sure. Accessibility talk is going on again. This time with, you know, less emphasis on a single... Whoops, let's not spill the coffee a second time. I don't think I can afford a second shirt. However, if you send your donations now, we will send you...
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, and that's a step up in many cases. Do we have another XLR coming through? Because that microphone's not connected. That microphone's connected.
This one is.
Yeah. That's it. Okay, so what we will do is we will ask our guests, one or more. I've got everything that could possibly spill in my hands. To scoot over.
We could try a new thing that's probably never been done on Radio Statler before.
Professionalism?
That too, but no, I'm not gonna go there. I can't go there. But
all the mics.
Yesterday
this is Sprite. What the hell? I asked for seltzer, they give me Sprite?
Yeah.
Ew, what the heck?
Boo.
How did they screw up that bad?
I don't know. I sent someone else
with
out.
High fructose corn syrup.
You know what? Low fructose corn syrup? How come there's no low fructose corn syrup? Why isn't there like a high glucose corn syrup? Why isn't there like a high fructose yam syrup?
I think they actually used yams for that at one time. Do you know the story of high fructose corn syrup?
No, please regale our high.
Regale you with well, back in the early 70s, there was a for whatever global economic reason, the price of sugar multiplied several times. It was really expensive.
Yes.
And I remember this because
particularly
I went out to dinner with my mom and her mom, and my grandmother knew how expensive sugar was. And on the table were little sugar envelopes at the restaurant. And she, like, took 10 of them out and put them in her purse. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, sugar is very expensive.
That's impressive.
And then,
yeah,
it was really expensive. And then restaurants just stopped putting it out by request only.
Yep.
But it was, you know, the cost of sugar was, like, multiplied several times. So there was this woman bioscientist at Royal Crown Cola, RC Cola, Royal Crown Corporation.
If you ever want to know
she
what
is known
was,
or... as the mother of the modern soft drink.
So she
and she figured out how to make corn syrup palatable and taste really close to sugar. And it was like incredibly dirt cheap, even compared to what sugar was when it wasn't skyrocketing in price. And
new and improved.
And yeah. And so they licensed it to Coca-Cola and PepsiCo and all those other companies and made a fortune on her invention. And then the price of sugar came back to normal again. But nobody went back to sugar. So since the early 70s, almost no soft drinks in the U.S. had real sugar anymore because they're cheap motherfuckers. We're not on the air, so I can say that on the internet.
If you ever want to hear Bernie curse, you have just missed your moment for this.
I would like to. I should have said that on my last off the hook show. I should have said that. But anyway, so that's the story of high fructose corn syrup. Somebody could Google her name. I don't know. That would be kind of interesting. Corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup scientist or woman or something. What's her name?
Google, all the Googles.
History of high fructose corn syrup.
Where'd that go? I don't know.
Human world.
Yoshiyuki Takasaki.
It didn't take off right away. See that? What was her name? Should be in here somewhere. Maybe they're not talking about the individual who the woman is.
Yeah, I don't seem to be.
Actually, no, search Seach Royal
Hello.
Crown.
Good. I'm so ready to rant about
corn syrup and Royal Crown.
Because I love half diamonds and people get them wrong all the time.
Nothing? Maybe so.
It's a conspiracy, I tell you.
Just because it's not on the internet doesn't mean it's not true.
That's true.
So what?
Office administration, right.
What I was going to suggest we do for the first time, I think it's the first time on Radio Statler, is have a cross-pollination incestuous radio experience. That is...
What happened to the wholesome Bernie we once knew?
The folks at Hope have... yesterday we set up an amateur radio repeater on the 18th floor.
Allegedly.
No, it was completely legal. We did everything right. We registered it with the repeater management. Oh, yeah.
Was this the 447 Mark 875 megahertz?
Yes. Such as, this is N3KOW listening and looking for anyone who wants to be on Radio Statler over the repeater.
And this is KC2TTK calling back, repeating the same request.
That pulley yesterday was horrifying.
You can say what you want on the repeater and have it go out on Radio Statler. No takers.
No takers.
Well, maybe they're all asleep.
I guess we could always listen in on the local news coming from the NYPD. I mean, we do have some live scanning capabilities.
I have a good story about that. Four years ago, the head of the NYPD radio system was here.
And I missed the opportunity to...
Well, he was not here as a speaker. He actually was invited by Matt Blaze.
His name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, Matt's here. He comes to every Hope.
Hold on.
He's right
a speaker.
Wait a minute. Matt Blaze is here?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have not met this person in person?
Wait, seriously?
Seriously?
Yeah, we set up for hours yesterday.
He's been coming to Hope for decades.
I have been... Wait a minute. There are people here that I know, and I don't know whether I know them?
Yes.
Oh, crap.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, he's, everywhere.
This is like my nightmares come true again.
Well, is it a nightmare? You don't have to know everybody.
This is so terribly embarrassing. These are people I, you know,
You probably anyway,
so
know
that
him.
Place,
so Pete came. He,
right.
was, he ran the whole NYPD radio system, all the repeaters, the encryption keys, which Matt helped him set up, all that stuff. And he was at Hope, and I can say this now because he's no longer alive. He had an aneurysm a few months later, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
But yeah, terrible. He's a really nice guy.
Has also the time of what was it? The time
I'm
of
sorry, I can't hear you.
How about the time of conditions or the time between you know offenses has passed?
It was a good year after that. He died. It's sudden brain hemorrhage. It could happen to anybody. But anyway, while he was here that year, we were back in the cloak room. Behind the 2600 story is where we had the radio repeater stuff
oh, yeah,
and set up.
That old stuff upstairs.
Yeah,
between,
yeah.
Was it now Vaughn and Booth?
Or? Exactly.
Okay, so there you go, folks.
And Pete was pointing out to me. Oh, he was like introduced himself to me. I guess he'd heard me on Off the Hook, and he liked me from that. I guess I don't know. He's like,
that's how
Bernie.
That's right.
Weird. So he's like, see that guy there with the big hair? He's NYPD undercover. See that guy? That guy, too, NYPD, because he used to set them up with the radios, like, do their wires.
He was outing his,
yes!
his own.
He trusted me enough to do that, and I didn't tell anybody.
Well, it's too late now.
I didn't still say who he said was, and I'm not betraying any confidence because he's not alive anymore.
But that is quite impressive.
I was impressed how many NYPD undercovers here, plainclothes, and I would have never guessed from their appearance. I thought they were college students or just... They just fit in well. They were dressed to fit into the crowd, like
wow.
they look like you or any of us.
Hold on, wait a minute. It's you.
Yeah.
Ah.
String well. Anybody got any string?
No, I say that because the one guy had like lots of hair and a beard, and he was a young guy. And
in other words, he fit in perfectly.
Exactly.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, good cover. You know, these yeah. guys were, and there were several, and those were just the ones he was able to point out in a few minutes out of the hole. He was just standing there like. There were a lot. And that probably hasn't changed since.
Wow, that's horrifying.
So there may be someone in this room. No. Anyway.
It's
there,
you!
There are, and that's just and the folks from he knew from NYPD. There were, you know, there were a lot of other law enforcement organizations and agencies, the, you know, the New York State Police, federal agencies, other state, other
is
states.
Is the tie-dye rule still in effect?
If they wear tie-dye, then it's a giveaway?
Yeah.
The ones I remember that particularly fail, the ones with the Hawaiian shirts.
I brought a Hawaiian shirt.
There's only one exception that I know of to that rule.
Yeah. Wait, actually, I thought we weren't live yet. Are we live?
I don't know. Are we?
Live.
Are we live?
We're live?
Yes. Is this camera? Is this one live episode?
Yep, sounds alive. That mic is live.
Oh, shucks. Well, today I learned.
Always treat every microphone as if it were live.
Remember, guard his social security number very well that he said on air.
One. Two,
three,
dash,
four, five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, that's a different one.
No, I can't believe nobody took us up on our offer to be on the radio through the repeater.
That's horrific.
But, yeah.
Let's
that's unfortunate.
That's actually kind of
N3, KOW, listening. Does anyone hear me?
Nope.
You don't count.
No, I definitely don't count.
I'm surprised no one's awake.
It's 2 a.m. Whatever.
That might be. That might
during
be
the day, there's a fair amount of repeater
yeah.
traffic.
Well, in that case, I guess we'll just tune into the local news. And
so what do you think about having an amateur radio repeater at Hope? Do you like the idea?
I absolutely love the idea. I mean, radio has become more and more and more a hobby that you're seeing people jump into that you wouldn't normally expect.
There's a lot of potential for cross-pollination between the amateur radio competing, which is sort of the stuffy reputation and old guys and whatever.
Yeah,
but
I'm finding that they're younger.
I'm an old guy.
A lot more women, a lot more anything
yeah.
in between. I mean, whatever the correct
so
term is for
non-binary.
Right.
That's why I've been, like, I kind of spearhead this amateur radio station and the repeater for years, and I convince people to bring equipment. I set up a mailing list. We all do that, mm-hmm. And I think it's just a nice attraction to have at Hope to learn that there's this other. I mean, amateur radio is probably one of the oldest telecommunications hacking communities in the world. I mean, these people started hacking the ionosphere and wireless communications in the early 1900s using crude electrical equipment, and they were like, shit, I mean, we can talk. Yeah, spark gap transmitters. And it's amazing stuff.
But if you think about the first, you know, voice transmission, if you will, was a complete friggin' hack. It was the Christmas greetings. What was it, 1904? 1914?
I don't know. Maybe I don't know the story.
Apparently, a lot of ships at sea were very, very confused because they suddenly started hearing music.
Wow.
Where they were expecting dits and dahs.
And somebody modulated it.
And somebody modulated it.
That's incredible. Oh, my gosh.
So a hack like that today would be the equivalent of...
Well, I'm curious how that could work because... These were CW receivers just set up for Morse code. That would like be there of a tone if there was a carrier or no tone if there wasn't a carrier. So how would they have modulated that if it was, you know, they had a BFO, a beat frequency oscillator for the Morse code? How would a transmitter have modulated that in such a way that these...
Maybe some crazy guy just decided to put a telephone and hook it up to...
That was long before a single sideband, so yeah. It wasn't like if you ever CW receiver and it was a single sideband transmission, it would demodulate the music. It would kind of sound off key. But these were not AM radio. Actually, you know, no. The early transmitters, receivers there were just detecting whether there was a signal or lack of signal.
Right.
There was no modulation yet. Right. They hadn't figured out how to modulate anything yet.
Yeah. So
that's, so how did they? Legendary. Maybe that was later on when there was voice communications, and then they were used to hearing voice communications, and then they heard music, and like, what the fuck?
Well, you know, let's see.
I don't know.
We've got crazy shit over here on Wikipedia. I'm just trying to see if I
can
find.
I've actually found
story.
Something from 1900. Some dude named Reginald, like, Fezzenden.
Reginald Fezzenden, yes.
Yes.
Oh,
he
I
made
know
the first
that.
Weak transmission of voice over the airways, apparently. And then Marconi conducted the first successful transatlantic experimental radio communication in 1901.
Yeah, but does it say if it was Morse code or was it audio? With
audio. It was his voice.
It was
It was weak. It was a weak transmission, but it was...
What was the...
Oh, no, we're locked in.
Oh, shucks.
What was the content of the communications? Let's go on.
It doesn't say, but it said a weak transmission of voice.
Interesting. So they were modulating that. When did Marconi do that?
Fessenden actually did that first, 1900.
Right, but Fessenden didn't... It was, like, not actually radio, sort of radio.
Yeah,
it was really
point.
Electromagnetic stuff. It was really low frequency. Mm-hmm. I mean, I give him credit. It was, like, first wireless communications. But it wasn't like radio as we know it.
That's
but
look, we're not giving him the Lee the Forest Prize, you know? It's not like,
yeah,
you
know, yeah.
Hey, it works, and I'm just great at it. There must have been something behind that.
But, interestingly, the first... transatlantic communications that Marconi did were not done far from here in Wall Township, New Jersey.
That sounds about right.
Where there is now the InfoAge Science Center. It was the former Camp Evans, and during between World War One and Two, I guess, Marconi erected these massive towers there. And I guess when you erect these massive towers and you have a party of people there, is it referred to as an erection party? I don't know. But anyway, whenever I help somebody put up an antenna, I say, hey, let's go have an erection party.
Well, if you have an erector set, you a set of erections.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
Easy. Folks, send in your comments over on IRC. Yes, we are keeping
so
a mic open.
They put up these massive towers in Wall, New Jersey, and somewhere in England. And that was the first transatlantic communications.
I want to say Sheffield, but I also want to say Manchester, and I don't know why.
I don't know where exactly.
If you happen to be in the UTC time zone, you're waking up to this. One, sorry. Two, where the hell did we put up the erector set?
Well, there were wireless there was wired communications across the Atlantic then. They ran these cables.
Right.
And it was insane. They would run these because the loss was ridiculous, and the salt water would get in there, and sharks would bite the cables and all this shit.
And now we blame Russia.
And yes, but it was the voltage drop was so ridiculous that on the crosses cable, they didn't know about like amplifiers along the way and stuff. So they would have this needle to see if the voltage was up or on, and it was so weak that by they got the other end, it's barely move the needle. So they'd be a bunch of guys standing around this meter looking to see if it was did it move? Did it move? Did you see it move? Looked like it moved to me. I don't know. I don't think it moved. It moved, and it was
here's
ridiculous.
Here's a funny one for you. I mean, this is around the same time when we have Tesla and Edison fighting each other for AC/DC.
The Tesla Science Center is here today.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely. Now, but this is the interesting question. Did they ever try using AC for... Oh, we have information.
AC for what?
Yeah, so, okay. So, broadcast by Reginald A. Fessenden, 1906. So, on the 24th of December, 1906, it was the first radio broadcast for entertainment and music from Brant Rock, Massachusetts, to the general public.
And what was the frequency, Kenneth?
Let's find out. Doesn't list.
See, that's important.
AM.
Huh?
AM, apparently.
On what frequency? Was it just like... Like a few kilohertz.
It has to be a few kilohertz.
It was ground. It was actually ground wave. The thing is, it was ground wave.
That sounds like a. I want to say 200 kilohertz.
It was ground wave. It was through the earth. It wasn't actually over the air. It was through the earth.
It sounds like long wave.
Amplitude modulation, superimposed electric waves, vibrating.
He invented the vibrator.
Yeah.
Or the monostable multi-vibrator. My favorite sex toy.
I kept looking at
that. Yeah, it doesn't list
that's
it.
The best line.
In
hey, check out. Want to try out my monostable multi-vibrator? That is a real engineering term.
It is. It shows up in the CMOS book of Motorola chips.
And there
I was,
you go.
I'm looking at it, I'm like, what the hell is that? What?
It's in my rabbit.
Oh my gosh, like half a lifetime ago. Yeah!
Actually, so the Tesla Science Center is here. Did you want to raise your hand to say something? Oh, okay. You were just like rah-rah to the monostable multivibrator. Thank you. So what's your name, by the way?
Squirrel.
Squirrel? Thanks. Bernie. I'm Bernie. See, that's why I'm wearing the shirt.
This is the infamous Bernie S.
Infamous.
The infamous Bernie S.
I never heard of that.
That's
S
good.
From Philadelphia.
I actually worked on it. That's been my hacker.
I got an idea. Let's put some static over your voice and let's see if it sounds like it would be on a pub.
That's great. You know, it's funny. I hooked up this really high quality audio link for off the several years ago, and it worked great. And of course, the operations manager at the station was so jealous he didn't come up with the idea that he shut it off after a few weeks. But we got emails saying, you have to set up... There's somebody. You have to set up a narrow bandpass filter for Bernie so he sounds normal again.
So there we have our background static coming from... what's our main frequency? 147 mark 545 megahertz.
But what is it? It's just noise. I want to hear communications.
Oh, well, in that case.
But I got a Tesla Science Center story to tell.
And a wild bunny has appeared.
Hey, bunny.
Wait. Okay, so if your name is Bunny. So
We're just talking about the rabbit.
Because I also love bunnies, because like, if you like to see my necklace, I'm like,
should I pack it for
wait, which
pack? Should I pack?
We are being spied. Why are we being spied? Is it somebody who wants to come in?
No.
No.
Noise.
Maybe.
We need to have...
Go home, Johnny.
This door is closed. Thank you.
Well, at least that side is.
Can I tell the story about the Tesla Science Center that's here?
Please do.
All right.
While
so
we find a chair for
I'm one of my many hats I wear for Hope Organizing is I'm on the vendor committee. It's basically myself and Greg Newby. And so, you know, we put up the website and, like, you know, this is what you have an opportunity to be a vendor here and so forth. And we have nonprofit vendors. This is, like, good inside information. It's not secret, but important to know.
Dirt.
We have... Well, just nuts and bolts behind the scenes of Hope Organizing. We have, like, about 27 vendor tables here. And we want to have a good mix of nonprofit organizations and for-profit organizations. You know, the guys that sell the lockpicks are for-profit. But we also have, you know, like, EFF, ACLU, Freedom of the Press Foundation.
I think it's the Tor Foundation.
The Tor, yes. Calyx. Courage Foundation.
Society?
No, they're for-profit. Well, maybe they're not making enough money. I don't know. But that doesn't make them a non-profit, right? So, did anybody have any of their cookies? Their cookies were missing this morning. Shayna.
I don't risk
Shayna, who rented the table, or was manning the table. Well, no, I sent the commercial vendors. I wrote up this thing. I did some social engineering with the hotel to figure out how can vendors ship stuff to the hotel without sending it to the luggage room where you have to be a guest. And I'm like, there's all these conferences here, like the Westminster Dog Show. They got to ship stuff. Like, how do they get the dogs here? You know, they got to ship them in the mail,
you
I guess.
Put them on mail, you put them on a leash, you carry them on Amtrak or something like that. But
I guess. But I knew there had to be a way for conferences to ship stuff here. So I just called the hotel and talked to different people, and I finally got a document out of somebody about how they do it. It was a really poorly written Word document, so I rewrote it in a way so our vendors would know exactly how to ship stuff to a special room on the 18th floor. So that you could retrieve your packages for free instead of paying $5 a package from the luggage room when they're shipped to your name when you're a registered guest. It was a loophole I figured out. And then it was just happy. Why didn't I figure this out sooner? But I finally did figure it
Wisdom
out.
Wisdom takes time.
So I sent this information to Hackaday, and they're like, great, this makes things way easier for us. We don't have to schlep all this stuff here. And they shipped it here, but there was several boxes of these really delicious black... How would I know they were delicious? Black and white cookies.
Allegedly delicious. From third-hand party reports.
Black and white cookies. And Shayna was like, this morning I'm reading my emails, like, we can't find all these boxes. And she didn't say what they were. We couldn't find a shipment. There were several boxes missing. I'm like, somebody stole some boxes from the room. That's really bad. That would be a bad thing. I can't recommend this method to any other vendors if the stuff is disappearing from the room. It's supposed to be locked, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking... Then it occurred to me, maybe it was, last night I saw a bunch of boxes piled up outside of Pentop, outside of Vaughn. Like, what are all these boxes? And I'm like, ooh, these big cookies. They're about 6 inches in diameter, and they had a Hackaday skull and crossbones.
There was more like 4.5 inches in diameter. Not that I know anything about these things, but the skull and crossbones was only about an inch and a half.
No, the cookies
diameter.
Themselves were like 5 or 6 inches diameter.
Not that I know that anything about this, of course.
And they were thick.
I mean, yeah, they were like a half inch thick.
They were like closer to an inch thick.
They were that thick?
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, disinformation desk is
they had girth.
They had these were cookies with girth.
Girth and a skull and crossbone, too.
This is also from somebody who may or may not be a barista.
Possibly. And we also do have the T-shirt contest going on now at $125 at the leading bet.
Is that the first bet? You're going to start the bidding lower than that.
The more you bid, the less we send you.
So then I remember.
That's a new one.
Welcome back to this conversation.
So then I remember this morning, I saw these boxes of cookies. And they had the logo on it. I'm like, I put 2 and 2 together. I'm like, I emailed Shayna and Greg. It's like, were these by any chance boxes of cookies? She's like, yes, where are they? I said, they were delicious.
Oh.
I'm like, no, they're piled up outside of Pentop, outside of Vaughn. And she's like, yes, the cookies. I don't know why they were deposited there. It was a courier instead of like FedEx. The courier didn't know where to put them. So they just stacked them there. Did anybody have any of those cookies?
Nope.
They looked.
I
took one that night. I stole one.
I cannot confirm nor deny that the cookie was devoured.
Oh, come on.
Oh,
however, the cookie was seen.
They were cool cookies.
I don't know. They were nicely designed cookies,
and
except their logo sort of flaked off.
Yeah, when you pulled them out of the envelope, the skull probably wiped off.
Exactly.
It's a rip. Now, if you opened it like a, like a trap door, you could have saved the logo. But there should have been a warning label. Caution, do not slide cookie out of this envelope or you will smear the Carl and Crossbones and it will be completely
in the back side of it. You know, that would have been really hilarious if the cookie itself was like, containing data.
Oh my gosh, that'd be
impressive.
How would
it do that?
Like a fortune cookie.
Oh, like a QR code in the icing?
Like, not even
that. Yeah, something that doesn't expire. Something that if you swallow, it would last as long as, how long does the regular cookie take? You know, maybe a year? You know, it's living in your browser cache, also known as we found it in your intestines. How dare you eat these cookies? It would have been a latent image.
So I saved the missing cookie. I solved this missing cookie mystery.
Cookie!
Yes. So I will plug Hackaday for donating all these delicious cookies. Well, how would I know they're delicious? But anyway.
That's not going to know anything.
And it was good. But back to the Tesla Science Center story. They wanted to bring a big Tesla coil. To Hope. And I built a Tesla coil years ago. They're cool. But if you look at the vendor requirements, part vendor rules of conduct, part of which are based on the hotel and the pavilion's rules based on their insurance policy, no open flames are permitted.
Well,
so that started
section.
A discussion on the Hope vendor list, basically me and Greg Newby and Emmanuel, whether plasma arcs are an open flame, or were there another form of matter or energy?
I have your answer. See, flame.
This is the stuff we have to debate.
But flame is a byproduct of oxidation.
Yes.
So unless you are dealing with plasma of oxygen.
Well, there is oxygen in the air here, though.
True, but
it was not in a vacuum. It was.
Oh, open air plasma.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Ooh. Is it a flame? Or is it some other form of energy?
No, it is a different form of energy. It's actually technically a different state of matter.
All right. Yeah. And I'm sure the hotel management would have gone for that explanation.
Oh, absolutely. At least their lawyers might have agreed to it in court and stipulated that, yes, we stipulate that plasma is a state of matter, not a condition of the matter that is inflamed. Because nothing flammable. But all the air is flammable.
That's true. Or is it inflammable? Which is it?
Oh, damn it, George Carlin. Where are you?
Got you.
It is... It is technically both, because it is mostly nitrogen.
What is the difference between flammable and inflammable?
There isn't.
Exactly. It's one of these English word...
Flammable and inflammable mean exactly the same thing.
And then you have non-inflammable.
Right.
That's a double negative. Actually, or is it? No, it's a negative.
It's not. It's a single negative.
It's non-flammable. It's the same as non-inflammable.
Yes.
But it really fucks with people's heads when you say non-inflammable.
Oh, especially, God. Not it's hurting my head.
Why don't you sit down?
Especially when you sort of go careening into the tank of holding a ton of petrol and you're thinking, is it flammable or non-inflammable that I'm about to crash into?
Should you use your cell phone at the gas pump? That kind of a thing?
Oh, something.
Secret, no, you shouldn't.
So we ended up...
No, please do. Let's just take the safety labels off of everything.
So we ended up not granting them the permission, because here's the other thing. So then Greg Newby, in his great research, found some document by some university or something, all the things that could go wrong with the Tesla coil, including making pacemakers stop.
Electrocution by any chance?
Yeah, catching curtains on fire, stopping pacemakers. And my argument was that it wasn't so much a physical danger, is that the back to the spark gap transmitter,
mm-hmm.
yep. it would jam the wireless network because the harmonics would go into the 2.5 and 5.8 gigahertz. What is that?
Egghertz?
Egghertz.
I think our egghertz. Yes, must be all those erection sets. But this is an interesting question that you raised up, because I've seen this also happen. I used to have a good spot on top of a garage late at night where I could pick up good shortwave reception in the middle of winter.
Awesome. I love shortwave.
And then they changed over to LED bulbs.
Noise!
Yeah.
No. How about compact fluorescence? Did they do that first?
No.
They were the worst.
No. They actually went straight to LED panels.
Okay.
And that
some of them are the shittiest noise-throwing pieces of shit. Of the RF spectrum.
So,
I'm sorry.
So here's the question, and this will be of interest to our radio personnel, people's. Hold on, let me have more coffee.
The noise level is going up around here. What's going on?
I think some of the parties are letting out.
Oh, that's why people are showing up.
Yep, 2:30.
Oh, that's it. Last call, of course. So, going back to where the hell were we? Someone on IRC, tell us what the hell we were talking about earlier. Oh, well. Anyway.
Erections?
Something about
Tesla coils?
Harmonics.
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 The Tesla coil spark gap, spark, would it be generate harmonics into the microwave regions of 2.4 and 5.8 gigahertz jamming our network? That was my argument. We could have a problem. And I also said the even lower frequencies of the cell phones, which are maybe 800
to 900
or above,
range,
or 700 meg, even 700, man. Verizon bought the 700 megahertz band a few years ago. So,
have they worked to expand that band down so that they're going to take it over from what used to be, I think,
Well, they got DHL. Part of the 700 megahertz band. That was part of the big scam where
DTV
broadcasters,
yes.
The DVD conversion, the TV broadcasters. What a big scam. There's a whole book written about this called
One of Many.
Defining Vision, a highly recommended book, came out in the 90s, about the whole push in Congress for digital TV. And it was all about money. It was surprising. So the TV stations, which are broadcasting on NTSC analog modulation schemes, on the standard TV frequencies going up to... Well, actually, the VHF ones went up to what?
13, which was, I believe, 521 megahertz, somewhere around
good
there.
Good memory. And UHF went all the way up to channel 83. And the upper ones, when the analog cell phone was still around, the amps...
Crossed right over.
You could listen to cell phone conversations on an old TV set by tuning around channel 81, 82.
Or you could subtune an FM dial, hit channel 6, channel 5, and pick up the audio channel because it was... compatible enough with FM receivers.
Yes.
You could
say that again?
You could dial down to, I think it was 72.6 or 72.5 megahertz below the normal broadcast scale.
Right, and do
FM,
what?
And tune into Channel 5.
And you, do what?
And get their audio.
You could tune into...
Oh, right, right. Channel 6. No, Channel 6 audio was around 87.7 megahertz.
Right.
And WPVI-TV in Philadelphia actually advertised that on KYW AM News Radio. Like, and I thought it was a great ad because they were competing against KYW for news. Like, you can listen to the evening news on Channel 6 on your car radio on 87.7, and they're advertising this on a news radio station, KYW. I'm like, oh, that must have really jerked KYW's cherries. It's like, I love that. It's like KYW, like when KYW was taking money to advertise competition to them.
And also, in the New York area, because Channel 6 is wide open, it has become a haven.
Pirates!
Absolute.
Arg!
Pirates from downtown to Brooklyn. Excellent material. Don't we have a talk on
Did
this
you see talk? David Gorin's talk today?
I've been sitting at the disinformation desk all day.
I'm sorry to hear that. David Gorin, I'm going to plug.
But we do have a recording of it, and we have streamed it, and
okay.
We are putting Twitter information out so that people who are not anywhere in here can see
I got
it.
David to come 2 years ago, and it was a very successful talk. We had it in the back end of Pentops. It was a small room.
Oh, yeah.
And we had security had to keep people out because it was like people trying to get in there. It was over capacity. Someone who was in the audience then was like really intrigued by this, and David was talking about he wanted to write this website where you could, and the person who, one of the people in the audience at Hope said, I could help you write this thing, and they collaborated, and that's how we ended up. That was a really good story of Hope collaboration. They didn't know each other. They met at Hope, and they made this project into fruition, and now it's the what's it called, the Brooklyn Pirate Decoder or the Pirate... Look it up.
Something along those
lines.
Look
up David Gorin, G-O-R-E-N, Pirate Radio website or something. It's an amazing... Did any of us see that talk?
I wish...
It's superb.
I wish I could.
It was really... There's so many... he lives... I'm into his house. He lives in Flatbush. And he's a radio hobbyist like me. He listens to all kinds of stuff like you do. In a 24-hour period a few years ago, he monitored 36 different pirates... In a 24-hour period, in his one location from his house.
Brilliant.
Which is more...
And in the New York metropolitan area, which is all QRM and QRN.
Maybe.
QRN.
Well, he's got a good receiver. But that is more than there were licensed stations that he could hear. Which I think is hilarious.
That is beautiful. Wow. I'm actually really impressed. Holy shucks.
But there's some great material. Most of it's like this ethnic stuff, crazy, wacky religious stuff.
Oh, well, when really it's like wacky religious. I mean, ethnic, we used to have, this is going back maybe 30 or almost 40 years, when 1050 used to be like the ethnic channel, NYC's television station used to content deliver in particular languages at particular times. So it was a shared time. So
on TV.
On TV, before they went AM/FM only.
Yeah.
They used to have shared time broadcasting. Well, I think one was from like Korean television, one was from Japanese television, one was from Rai, one was from Teleplus. I'm trying to remember what the other ones were, but they would target specific ethnicities.
Yeah.
So that they would have their airtime and then simulcast.
And nobody does that anymore except the pirates.
Exactly. And they're serving that niche market, but they're serving it so damn weird and well.
Yeah.
And as for the crazy lunatics on God trips, I can tell you exactly where they are. I am not going to name them, but I'm just going to say 588 1 megahertz.
Wait,
5881 kilohertz. So 5.881 megahertz.
What is it, 58.81 kilohertz?
Is a channel that is interfering with a number station that I was following for years.
At 58 kilohertz?
5.881
megahertz. Oh, 5.8 megahertz.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jammer. I was convinced that this was a religious cult fanatic against number stations because they would always interfere with HM01 and SK01, VO2A, and VO2N, which was the Cuban number station.
Yes.
The only thing worth listening
to. You could have written to Arnie Coro and said he's the co-founder of Radio Havana. He's a ham, too.
Oh,
you ever listen to his show?
No.
It's called... He does a science and technology show on Radio Havana, 6,000 megahertz.
Okay,
6,000 kilohertz.
Heard show. I have heard
and
a show.
And the other one is called DXers Unlimited.
Yes.
Good show. Arnie's a good guy. He never talks politics. He just talks about how to modify like broken old TV sets into ham radio receivers and transmitters and stuff because they don't have much stuff there. And I know Arnie. Actually, I've been trying to get him for years to come to the SWL Fest, but and it was best on the verge of doing it last year, and then Trump got elected. Like, motherfucker. So what are you going to do? So, but anyway, you could have written a letter to Arnie because he knows about the number of stations. He'll never admit it, but he knows about them, and he's involved with the engineering of them. And he can't admit it, but you could have written a letter. You could have wrote to him or emailed him.
And
who? Our
we have a invasion, theft, knapsack theft, security,
beep.
Security,
beep, 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 beep.
And sent a interference report to him. It's like, hey, this Cuban number station is being interfered with by these capitalist light bulbs, which are ironically made in China in a communist country. And why are these Chinese making things that interfere with another communist or social, like, this is a conflict of interest.
Absolutely. I mean, how can you be communist and yet exalt profit? That does not make a lot of sense. But, hey, there you go, Deng Xiaoping. No, after Champagne, I think it was.
China will sell us the rope that they will hang us with, or something like that.
Well, either way, it's limbo. But I do recall there was a, and this is while I was still living in, like, concrete and steel in Manhattan. And I was picking up what sounded like HMO1, SDI, all these different varieties that Cuba was trying out at the time. And then all of a sudden I'm thinking, why am I hearing music? And it's not any interfering channel. And then they do a Radio Havana ident.
Cool.
Oops.
Yeah, they screwed up.
They screwed up so regularly it gave it character.
But that was like it was like the laughing stock. The Cuban number stations were always a laughing stock because sometimes one time there was like a tropical bird in the background that was like in the studio or something, and like crazy shit, but like kind of sloppy engineering. And
that's what gave it the kind of character.
Love that.
And you compare that to like our local pirates, which are almost full-fledged,
sometimes better studios. Production quality than commercial stations.
Horrifically better in many cases.
The Brooklyn Pirate Radio Sound Map. What's the URL?
PirateRadioMap.com.
PirateRadioMap.com. It's a superb, it is an awesome app. You can click around the city and see the names and frequencies of different pirate radio stations. And he wants to expand it to the whole city. Just, you see, there's just those three sections there on the map. What areas are covered there by the map?
Borough Park,
Flatbush, East Flatbush, East New York, Brownsville.
Right.
South Crown Heights and Crown Heights.
That's because that's where David can hear stations from his home in Flatbush. But he wants to expand this to do the whole map for the whole city and all that western area.
There are two things that I've just thought of. One that I haven't thought about in years, which was New York International, transmitting from open waters.
I can't hear you.
Sorry.
It's a signal and noise ratio here.
Yeah. Will you all shut up out there?
Shut the fuck up.
Bastards. But there was the New York International, which used to transmit from open waters, the same way Voice of Peace used to transmit from somewhere in the Mediterranean.
Alan Weiner. Did you know that I had Alan Weiner come and speak at Hope many years ago?
I think you may have mentioned it once or twice.
I had Alan Weiner, Tim Tron, W-A-1-H-L-R, Tim Tron, who's an amazing radio engineer, who was the engineer for that and later WBCQ, which is Alan's later legal station. This was like H2K or H2K2, I think. And so I had Alan Weiner, who Radio New York International, Tim Tron, who was one of the engineers for that. I think Andy Yoder I had that year. He's a famous radio, famous because he does great logs of pirates. And we've written several books on pirate radio, shortwave pirate radio. Mm-hmm. And a guy named Craig, who ran a shortwave pirate called Anteater Radio. Now, Craig was a long-haul...
That's very familiar.
Craig was a long-haul trucker. Now, I met him at the annual SWL Fest, and that's swlfest.com. Great annual radio gathering of only 100-some people just north of Philadelphia come from around the world to this, like, really... That's where I bring all these great guests. Like, that's where I met David Gorin, did this thing. That's where I met Thomas Witherspoon, who's doing the talk tomorrow about build a radio... time machine. It's going to be amazing. Really good stuff. I'll get to that.
Radio time machine?
I'll get back to it. It's fascinating shit.
I can't wait.
Fascinating. And Amanda Dawn Christie, who just did this stunning performance downstairs at the conference tonight. She plays a theremin, and she's doing a workshop tomorrow. Ooh. I think. What time is her workshop tomorrow?
That's a good question.
You got to promote this.
Since I'm the disinformation desk, I have no idea what's going on ever.
Just go to workshops. And so Amanda Dawn Christie is doing this workshop tomorrow, follow up to her theremin performance to show. Well, she didn't just play a theremin at the concert tonight.
Playing the Ghosts of Radio Towers.
Right.
Saturday, 14 to 1600.
So, yeah.
So that's so two to four
tomorrow. And you will not only get to play her theremin, it's a Moog that she built from Kit. But she has its control voltage output. She feeds into an Arduino, which then, depending on the control voltage output that she can modify from playing the theremin, triggers different subroutines on the Arduino. In this case, during her performance, show different slides or pictures of the shortwave radio towers of Radio Canada International, where she was doing a documentary. She's also a filmographer. She's doing this amazing documentary, Radio Canada International. You know what Radio Canada International was?
No,
it was like the Canadian version of The Voice of America,
except better. Yeah.
Radio Moscow. All the big countries in the world had an international shortwave broadcast. State media, but broadcasting sometimes really good, truthful information, mostly like Radio Canada. VOA was reasonably truthful. BBC was, except I learned when I was in college, listening to the BBC and Radio Argentine during the Falkland Islands crisis.
Listening to
the news reports of them both days, like, wait a minute, that's not what you got. Fascinating.
I'd kill nowadays to have a good recording of that.
I should have recorded it.
But it
was great. It was the same, like,
the same
shit that went down that day, but completely different versions of how it went down.
Of course.
The Argentines and the Brits.
Yeah, we were winning. We were winning.
I was kind of hoping. Because remember, I keep going off on these tangents. Do you remember?
It's all about the tangents.
The Brits actually wanted to, like, show, like, the last vestiges of the British Empire, and they got the Queen Mary II, the big ocean cruise liner, and they painted it white and converted it to a warship.
Yes,
this was
in
1981, and they sent it across to these little pipsqueak tiny islands off the coast of Argentina. There's just like little grain of sand islands where there's just sheep and a few people on them. But they wanted to keep that part of the British Empire, so they sent this thing over. Now, the Argentines were actually sinking successfully. They bought these French Exocet missiles from France, which are really good. They would just fly just above, skim above the surface of the water, and you couldn't detect them with radar because they were so close to the noise floor on the radar. And they sank some British ships. I was really hoping that they would nail the Queen Mary II. Can you imagine how that would be like? They sank the Queen Mary II.
A ship that big, they can't even get the back of the net. What's wrong with them?
The reason they didn't hit it is the Brits surrounded it with its multiple security perimeters of other ships
because
that would all
forbid.
Get hit first. They knew that would be a big target that you couldn't miss. And they surrounded it with like 100 other ships in every... There's no way you could hit it.
And also the first, as I recall, the first war with a Harrier jet.
Yes.
Which was unproven at the time.
Yes.
Was put into action. And I believe it was the...
The vertical takeoff and landing thing.
The commander said, you know, I counted 20 taking off and I counted 20 landing. And then after that day, I never questioned it again. And the Mirages flew and basically they said, wait a minute, this is not like driving, you know, through the streets of Buenos Aires. Hold on, wait, this is a real war.
Interesting. Why was like, Radio Canada International
was acting as media.
Let me know if you want me to shut the fuck up.
No, hold on, let's take a look at the IRC channel. IRC channel, no, people are asleep, so
shut the fuck up, Bernie.
Screw them.
All right,
keep going.
So Radio Canada International was one of these.
We are going to sell this shirt now for $150, $160.
No, you got to go down, you got to keep bidding down until somebody bids on it.
If we promise not to send it to you.
You expect people to bid on it if you keep going up?
No, I expect them to dive.
Good line, Mr.
So,
Bond.
Radio Canada.
Radio Canada International. So Amanda Dawn Christie, who was a performer tonight and a workshop presenter tomorrow, was there, I think, 4 years ago doing a film documentary about Radio Canada International. When the word came down while she was there that the Canadian government is going to stop all funding for Radio Canada International, and that everything should be dismantled. And
now they're still retaining CHU, the time signal.
Oh, that's completely different. Yeah.
Okay.
On what frequency?
Oh, it's 3330 kilohertz.
Yes.
785 something kilohertz.
I don't know the second, but the first one, you're right.
7854, I think it is.
Damn.
I should know this stuff.
Oh, hey, wait.
Because I actually sent a QSL card and I got a response.
Awesome. They're great. No, the people at WWV are you CHU or WWE?
CHU.
All right, hold on. I'm going to grab my phone.
He's got to grab his phone. Okay.
Wait. Can I rant about, like, half diamonds for a second?
Do
then?
It quickly.
Cool. Perfect. Okay, cool. So half diamonds. Oh, okay. A lot of people use the wrong half diamonds and they think.
These are lock picks.
Oh, lock picks. Sorry. Yeah, that sounds really weird without that context.
This is, like, too late. Whatever stupid radio geek I am. Look at my phone book here.
7850 kilohertz. Go.
Okay, cool. So, all right. So, half diamonds, a lot of people for lockpicking assume that half diamonds are terrible, and some people think it's only like a beginner lockpick, and I'm like, absolutely no. It teaches really good, like, technique and habits, like, with, like, going perpendicular to the lock on the side view, right? And, like, depending on, like, the style and, like, the actual profile of the half diamond, it can be very precise, like a hook, basically. So, you're kind of actually, like, you have the benefit of a half diamond where you're just gliding into the lock, but you're also kind of almost hooking actually with the half diamond. So that's actually how I prefer my half diamond to be like. If it looks flat and it's like really wide, that is not, that's a shim at that point. Just use it to stab someone. Actually, don't do that. I do not advocate for violence.
What if you don't actually use your tools to stab
people? Yeah, please don't do that.
Don't do that. No. Bad idea.
Avi when tired, huzzah. But yeah, no.
Well, we do have extra coffee.
Coffee makes me sleep.
Radio?
Don't see me sleep like instantly? Coffee.
Well, here we have the disinformation desk this year, now serving Uptime Plus Plus Coffee. Uptime Plus Plus Coffee keeps you awake at least 24 hours straight. Here's the proof.
Unless you're Avi and like you're out in like a second.
Slurp. Slurping on the air. Slurp. Or on the stream. It's not on the air, actually, but... Well, actually, is this station on the air if someone is listening to it over a wireless internet connection?
Oh, that's an interesting question. That would be the encoding and packeting of the wireless
system.
It's
on the air.
Yes, but
it's being carried over
broadcast?
The air. It's not a broadcast, though. You're right.
So it is over technically the air, if not the ether. Ether?
All right. Here is a radio audio trivia challenge for you. It's only one of two choices. You have 50% chance of getting it right.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am taking... we have the blindfold on.
Is this station audio? I'm going to call... either WWV or WWV in Fort Collins, Colorado, or
challenge
WWVH
accepted.
Or WWVH in
challenge
Hawaii.
Accepted.
And just from if it's not on the hour, they won't do the announcement. So here we go.
It is definitely.
Which one is this? I'm gonna put it on the speaker here.
It may actually be during silent period.
Hold on, I'm gonna turn on the speaker on my phone. Come on, a minute. No speaker.
On that note, I'm going to be totally crashing because, whoops.
It's playing.
Night all.
You have a good one, Avi. It's been nice having you.
I think they're doing geospatial.
Is there any way we don't have a monitor? Can you hear it?
VH.
How did you know?
Female voice.
That's right.
Yes, based on Jane...
Jane Barbie,
yes. Couldn't remember the last name. I was thinking Jane Baird. No, but I ended up thinking...
You're thinking of that porn star.
No. What I ended up thinking of was June Foray. Every time I think of Barbie, I think of June Foray. You know, buddy, it's Natasha. And Rocky Squirrel. And quite a few others.
During the... remember a few couple years ago, there was this internet time kerfuffle where there was like... I forget what the fuck it was.
Was it based around like a deviation from like 60 hertz or 50 hertz because one power station was...
No, it wasn't that. It was something to do with... Oh, it had to do with the leap second and time servers.
Yes.
And how they were going
to
do it.
Where they wanted to skew the definition of the second in order to keep chronometry simple.
Right.
So sort of basically like regular falsy.
Good analogy.
Except it's flawed because we use TAI, Time International Astronomical.
So, of course, I had to contact WWV and speak with the chief timekeeper.
Wait. You speak with the chief timekeeper?
Yeah, at WWV. Well,
That's power.
Well, I just called on the phone. I'm like, can I talk to the chief timekeeper? And, you know, because I wanted to invite him on to be a guest on Off the Hook.
Oh, wow.
To, like, settle this thing.
Oh, that is so
And it was
so
a great,
cool.
You can go back and you could actually look it up here. I don't know if it's like the list with the topic of the show. We had him on. It was great. So I asked his opinion, and I can't remember what it was now, but it was just cool to have on the show the chief timekeeper of the United States of America.
Actually, this raises an interesting question.
And how many people ask him, "Hey, buddy, you got the time?"
There's a parody of WWV that somebody has made.
Not just that, it's like...
But it's like, you know, it's 1, 2, 3, every second counts at WWV for the time of your life.
Oh, there's WWV. A better one where it's all Mexican foods.
Really?
Have you heard that one?
No.
It was a play on a number station. Where instead it was a parody of a Cuban number station. Instead of Cuban numeric digits, it was Mexican foods.
Oh,
and that was on a pirate shortwave station. I'm like, it was great.
This is somebody stole my idea.
Now,
actually
there's
did.
Another pirate radio. There's some great pirate radio stations on shortwave. Another one, I forget the name of it, but their slogan is all the what they do is they play excerpts of all the state time signals from different nation states, all around the world,
mm-hmm.
excerpts of them. And their slogan is, all the time, all the time. Which is great.
It's brilliant. I mean, also, with WebSDR getting to the point where it is, where you're hearing radios from halfway around the world, you're getting full coverage. And just bring it to the home like it was just another audio stream.
Which brings us as a perfect segue to the Radio Time Machine.
Was curious about this. How does this work?
My friend Thomas Witherspoon, who is the executive director of Ears to Our World, which is a really good nonprofit organization, etow.org, what they do is they get donations to buy inexpensive portable shortwave receivers that can be run by turning a hand crank or solar cell or both, and they ship them to schools in remote third world villages. These are dirt poor villages that have absolutely nothing. No electricity, no cell phone, no absolutely nothing. Really dirt, literally dirt poor. All they have is dirt. That's all they have is dirt and maybe some cows and goats.
Maybe
and
they,
some sticks.
Assuming they could own the dirt. It probably belongs to someone
else. I
don't
know. Like we're talking like deep into Africa and stuff. Anyway, so they ship these radios there so these people and the school teacher in these schools can actually pick up broadcasts and get this information. It's information. How do you get information to a village that has no electricity, no internet, no satellite TV? They got nothing.
And
how do you get information in?
And it's hard to get to those places because they are remote. They are hard to get to.
There's no paved roads. There's nothing.
What's a paved road? They're dirt poor. You have dirt if you're lucky.
And this was especially important during, was it Sierra Leone when there had, about 8 years ago, when there was a big Ebola thing? Or what was it? Was it there?
It could have been Sierra Leone.
So I contacted Thomas, like, dude, this is a great time to send radios there, so they could. Because the whole issue with the Ebola crisis was that there was education. Because they in that culture, when someone died, you had to like wrap the body mm-hmm. and stuff and bury it. Well, as soon as you touch the body, you get the Ebola.
Right.
You couldn't go near the body. No. So people were dying because of their burying people who died from Ebola.
That was 2014.
Only 4 years
ago?
That's about right. There was another one before that. West Africa. All right. Anyway.
Well, there's been a bunch in that region over time.
So people burying the Ebola
Seattle,
dead would get Ebola, and people would bury them, and they get Ebola, and it was just like it was extrapolated. It was getting crazy. And nobody knew about it because they didn't have there was no information about what was going on. The people mm-hmm. living in these villages didn't know that this was going to kill them. So hence get the radios in there. He liked that. Thomas got the radios in after. So this is a great idea. Get the radios in there. And the government set up a transmitter to like don't touch the dead bodies, you're gonna get Ebola. And anyway, back to the Radio Time Machine. So that's Thomas's job as an executive director of this, but he's also writes a superb blog called the SWLing Post.
Yes,
you've read it. Good.
I've
good
read
stuff
from time to time.
Good stuff. So I met Thomas several years ago, ten years ago at the SWL Fest, and I finally convinced him to come to Hope. And he, a couple years ago, sort of, I wouldn't say launched a project, but tried to popularize the concept of people building radio time machines. And that amounts to, do you remember back in the 80s you could actually use a video cassette recorder, which had a wide bandwidth.
6 megahertz.
And you could record off at the IF output of your shortwave receiver like a whole chunk of spectrum at once.
Oh, yeah.
And then later play it back through your receiver and tune around as if you were...
They were designed for the 6 megahertz bandwidth of the NTSC signal,
yes,
including chroma and audio
awesome
side channels.
So you could actually tune around later as if you were at a radio back in that time when it was recorded.
So they used VHS as a full
or
spectrum,
beta,
or beta, as a full channel-wide spectrum recording,
yes,
in analog mode.
Yeah.
Let me just remind this to
listeners. Awesome stuff.
This is the equivalent
this of time-shifted 30 years ago
software, SDR radio.
Right, but people saved a bunch of those tapes.
You're kidding.
No, and better yet, nowadays, you can get like an RTL SDR dongle for like 20-some bucks, and which with a reasonably fast PC, laptop, whatever, record like the whole AM broadcast band at once, or several megahertz on like maybe even the whole FM broadcast band, or a big chunk of it anyway.
Yeah, there are a couple of particular web SDR sites. One of them is the University of Twente in Netherlands, which covers almost from 0 to 30 megahertz.
That's incredible.
I mean, it's user selectable, and it just.
You mean, are you talking about a remotely tuned SDR?
Yes, it's.
Yeah, that's
tuned.
The one.
And
that's the one at the University of Twente.
Okay, I did
yeah,
not
right.
Pronounce
there
it.
Was a, that there was that was the site of a Dutch hacker camp I went to like 15, 16 years ago, and it was right there on the university campus. But we had all these tents set up. It was great. So, anyway.
Well, I know that every day that they have, they actually record the whole day's spectrogram.
And you can
across
see where
the entire,
like, that, yeah, where the yeah bands are on the spike thing.
There was one particular page that we called for the solar eclipse.
Oh,
where
cool
you could see how radio interference changed and propagation changed as the sun came and went. Very interesting stuff.
So now, for like $25, if you have a computer and buy one of these RTL, SDR dongles, or some other similar or even better software-defined radio that plugs into your PC and the high bandwidth radio reception, wide spectrum, several megahertz. Like the AM broadcast band is only a little over 1 megahertz. It's not a lot.
I
like 550
no,
kilohertz
to 530
to 1710 now.
It
was 1610. Now they expanded to 1710.
Wasn't it up to 1810 earlier?
No, never. 1710 is the top, I think.
1710, okay.
The so-called X band from 1610 to 1710.
Oh, yes. I remember now.
So, but not many stations went up there anyway. So now that it's cheap and easy to do this, people are getting big, fat hard drives, multi-terabyte hard drives, which are now dirt cheap, and recording wide swaths of the radio spectrum. But like, where do you store all this? These big, all these hard drives lying around. So I'm like, Thomas, you gotta talk to Jason Scott at the Internet Archive.
He keeps showing up all the time. How does that
in
happen?
His top hat. Yeah, I reached out to him again last year. Like, you gotta do a talk at Hope. So he's going to be good. He didn't do it today yet. It's tomorrow?
I think it's tomorrow.
Okay,
so
good.
Let's take
Jason
a look
Scott
at the schedule.
His topic is like the ephemeral nature of information and why it's important to like and like the victories and the tragedies, like they didn't get there in time and it's gone.
I believe that's a Sunday
actually.
Sunday?
Yes, he gets a Sunday front row center.
So I put Thomas in touch with Jason, and the Internet Archive is donating huge amounts of storage for radio time machines. So big, massive freaking files, data files,
mm-hmm,
that with the right software, you can tune around in as if you were sitting at a radio at that date and time, and then Thomas and other people are getting all these videotapes from, not actual videotape, but
well,
the video cassettes
which had
from the 80s and 90s where these were recorded, and digitizing them and uploading them too.
I think
so. There's more and more radio time machines going on the internet, like recordings of entire bands of stuff that you can, like, all right, I'm going to tune around. Oh, Thomas, one of them is the AM broadcast band in New York on 9/11/2001.
Oh, that's a
from like right
recording
when this news report started happening. And you can tune around all day to the first reports as if you're sitting in an AM radio, listening to the commentary, like, because
hearing
half
the
facts, most of the facts weren't even right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's not just the news. It's
how
the context.
Yeah.
The context and how the story evolves and how the media echo chamber, like they this station reported this, and they're going to report the same thing because they heard it on this station, and how, you know,
unconfirmed
in wartime...
unconfirmed rumors have surfaced that.
Yeah, in wartime, truth is the first casualty. And there was all like, oh, the Arabs did it, and like, they, you know, and the, and this... Remember, all these people were getting arrested. They had nothing to do with it and all that stuff.
Well, the same thing with Oklahoma City. The first thing that they blamed...
They thought it was people, brown-skinned people.
They thought that was, you know... Islamist terrorists.
He was a good old, good old American boy.
Local boy, made in America. Yep.
So, actually, when I was in federal prison, that's when it happened.
Oh, wow.
I had the bad luck of being arrested about a week or two before that. And they searched my, the Secret Service searched my home and found, I used to like making fireworks and explosives when I was a kid and like blowing stuff up. It was fun. I never blew anybody or anything up.
And of course the timing kicks in and suddenly you're like...
And so the Secret Service, who wanted my ass big time anyway, tells the judge at my arraignment, my federal arraignment, Your Honor, this... Oh, wait. So, wait. Back up. So, I'm being transported... Well, at first they held me in a local prison, a county prison, until they could get the federal indictment together. Then the Secret Service picked me up and drove me to the federal prison in Philadelphia... a federal court in Philadelphia. Two Secret Service agents handcuffed in the back of their car. One of those two agents was one of the guys whose cover I blew on the evening news in Philadelphia by getting his a covert surveillance picture of him picking his nose broadcast on the evening news, which is really why they wanted my ass. Had nothing to do with hacking or cell phone fraud, because the federal, the Department of Justice's final pre-sentence investigation report stated in the victim impact statement, quote, there were no victims in the offense, end quote. But so that what they really want, according to the prosecutor in my case, who knew my attorney because he used to be assistant U.S. attorney in Philadelphia as well, the real reason he's in prison is because of what the feds found in my filing cabinet in my home, including those surveillance pictures, and they were probably wondering, who, he's the motherfucker that got these pictures on the evening news at the 2600 meeting in Philadelphia, who taped them on the wall. And then the Fox News TV, the local, not Fox News, but the local Fox affiliate showed up and like, what are these pictures? I'm like, well, they're undercover Secret Service agents. This was like about a year after the Secret Service was illegally getting mall cops at the Pentagon Mall in D.C., 2600 meeting, to harass the kids there and search their bags and seize their computers and shit. I digress. But anyway, while I was in federal prison, while I was, so... The Secret Service drives me to the federal building in Philadelphia, 6 and Arch. And just as we're pulling in to the underground parking garage, all these lights go, lights flashing, and like, what the f-? And the agents are like, they like, what is this? Like alarms and everything. It was a bomb threat.
Oh, lovely.
Because right after after the Oklahoma City bombing, there were all these copycat bomb threats to other federal buildings, like assholes calling in, like, there's a bomb in your building. And you can't ignore them.
Of course. You
so
have to take them all seriously.
They had to evacuate the whole federal building in Philadelphia. All the agencies.
Actually, what's the sound of a head?
Just as know. I'm being driven into the building, I'm like, there we go. Man. So I'm sitting out, and they'd bring in the dogs, the bomb dogs.
Of course.
And all that. So we're parked a couple blocks away, waiting for the dust to settle, so to speak, for like a couple of hours. Oh, man, that hurt, the handcuffs. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, they finally take me in there, and finally, hours later, I get arraigned before a judge, and the first thing the Secret Service says is like, Your Honor, we found in the defendant's home a collection of books on building bombs and explosives. It's like, the judge is like, no bail!
Whoa! And no standing radio, of course.
So,
of course, how do you
nothing dangerous found in my house at all, but old dusty books, even stupid books like the Anarchist Cookbook, which like I would have read for entertainment because most of that stuff wouldn't even work and it would be dangerous if you tried it.
Your Honor, he's a convicted communist and he reads Mad Magazine on the toilet.
Here you go. So that was my, talk about bad luck.
Yeah.
So that's how I got to be held without bail, just because the book's in my house. It was amazing.
That's bizarre.
It is like,
but you know what?
We make up the timing. No, this is a judge who had just an hour before been evacuated from his court because he thought he might get blown up. Now, here, get this. So when I got taken in to the The U.S. Marshal, the Secret Service took me in. They had to fingerprint me like 26 times because I wasn't really being completely cooperative. I was feigning cooperativeness, but I was like moving my fingers just enough to blur the fingerprints.
You were doing minimal effort.
I was fucking with them.
Well, of course.
They fingerprinted me. They knew I was like I'm holding still. I'm just nervous. My fingers are like I'm shaking. I can't help it. They hated it. What are they gonna do? I was just having an adventure.
Hey, you smudged, dude.
So they finally processed me. And then the U.S. Marshals took me into the holding cell before my arraignment. There's a bunch of other guys in the arraignment, in the federal arraignment, the U.S. Marshals. And, you know, we're saying hello to each other and whatever. And they're like, what was, I said, you just got in here? What was all that with the alarms and the sirens? It's like, oh, there was a bomb threat. The whole building was evacuated. Like, you didn't evacuate us.
Of course not.
They left the prisoners in there and everybody else left.
Yep.
And they left the prisoners in there to be blown up, which is how much they really respect people's rights. Like, we'll let these people who haven't been convicted of anything yet.
Hey, look, if they weren't guilty, they wouldn't be here.
Exactly. We'll just let them burn.
Yep.
And I'm like, holy fuck. Yep. That's when I was starting to get the impression, like, man, these motherfuckers are out for blood. I wasn't talking about the terrorists. I was talking about our own government.
Yep. You get enough people scared enough.
And I told those guys, and they're like, shit, they left us in here to get blowed up? I'm like, yeah. Sorry, man. And that's when I went to the arraignment, and the Secret Service first thing they said, books on bombs and explosives. I'm like,
what the
Christ. So, it's like bad luck. Anyway, so... Radio time machines. There's a talk tomorrow. How to build a radio time machine. What time is that?
I happen to have a program somewhere around here.
That's it. No, that's not it. Creating a radio time machine. That is?
Saturday at 7 p.m.
Yeah. So how you can very easily, for like $25, build a radio time machine, record a whole swath of the RF spectrum, and upload it so that other people can tune around that file later with SDR software as if they were using an SDR, but they were just receiving it off a file on a server on...
It sounds very
much... Is this cool shit or what?
This is fucking amazing. Awesome. I mean, this sounds like, you know...
Now, over time, there will be more and more radio time machines.
It reminds me very much of, like, using MES, the multiple emulator software system, or whatever the hell the letters break down to, and throwing it into JavaScript so that you can emulate old consoles, but in this case, instead of running a program, you're playing a program.
Yes, good analogy.
It's just brilliant.
So, Thomas Witherspoon is doing this talk, and David Gorin, who did the Pirate Radio talk, both good radio, they went down to the Library of Congress, which was, like, a year or two ago, was doing I wouldn't call it a panel, it was like a meeting of minds on archiving radio, recordings of radio.
Now, typically, wouldn't that go to the Smithsonian for or audio recordings?
Yeah.
Well, the Library of Congress
was wanting to do this on a grand scale.
Whoa.
But, so Thomas Witherspoon from Ears to Our World and David Gorin, who did the Pirate Radio Talk, who's also like a audio producer for like NPR, BBC, really first-class audio producer. Good talk today he did here. I try to bring some good speakers to Hope.
We've had some really good speakers.
Stuff. I have personally, not to brag. Yes, I mean, to brag. Not to brag.
Not to toot my own horn as being one of those speakers.
Good. To brag. I can't brag that I brought you. To
you
Hope.
You can kind of imply it.
No, I couldn't. I won't imply it.
All right.
I literally solicited and shepherded to successful approval about 24 talks and panels this year. And I think 4 or 5 workshops. Just me. I'm on the speaker selection committee. I'm going to beef about this. We have a good speaker selection committee. Everybody adds something. But I'm pretty much the only person that goes out and searches for speakers that maybe had never even heard of Hope before, that have something really interesting to say and explain. And everybody else kind of sits around and waits for this shit to land in their laps. And,
you're pursuing the talent.
What?
You're pursuing the talent.
Yeah, not everybody knows about Hope and sees the call for papers. There's a world of people out there that have really interesting stuff to talk about. They've never heard of Hope. What the fuck is that? Yeah, it takes people to reach out to these people and say, hey, you really are knowledgeable about this topic that we think we have a large audience of people who would be really interested in hearing about. Would you be willing to come to New York and give a talk about this and why it would benefit them? It's like you have a really informed audience, good networking, meet a lot of interesting people. It's free, at least the ticket is free.
We might be able to get you some black and white cookies out of it.
There you go.
Or maybe not.
And it's archived, and a lot of people will see it later.
And everybody will shower you with glory. Come,
so,
try.
So Mark Fahey, the Australian guy who I got to come 4 years ago to do the talk about North Korea, where he infiltrated covert radio reception equipment, like an SDR that looked like a USB drive in his laptop, and he used a coat hanger in the North Korean hotel room as an antenna to record domestic radio broadcasts, which had never gotten out of the country. Crazy shit!
I'm just thinking this over. Hold on.
He would have been executed if they'd caught him, but he says that they're really stupid. They're stupid, he said. They're stupid.
Hold on. I just want to visualize this for a second. He's at a USB device. Okay, it looks like a USB thumb. And a coat hanger?
It's an antenna.
It's an antenna, but...
But he couldn't bring an antenna in because it would look suspicious.
But a wire antenna is... That's good enough to pick
up... Sure, to pick up local radio broadcasts in North Korea, of course. Any, you know...
Holy...
What kind of a radio does a clock radio... What kind of antenna does a clock radio have?
Well, that's more of a ferrite core, isn't it?
It's a what?
Ferrite core.
No, well, if it's AM, or if it's FM, it's a...
Yeah,
extension.
The extension
core. The power cord, yeah.
Yeah.
Through inductive coupling, but... So he recorded all this domestic radio shit, and he gave a great talk about it 4 years ago. And that talk and other weird shit he saw in North Korea, he went there four times. He went to every... There's like, it's broken up. It's like Canada. It's broken up into four...
Provinces.
Yeah, thank you. And I don't know if they call them provinces. Something in Korean.
Regions.
Yeah,
region
like that.
Prefectures.
He went to all four
like
of them, and he recorded shit in all of them and took a lot of pictures that he wasn't supposed to. And... Tons of amazing. He did probably more and brought back more intelligence than the CIA. In fact, he gets his website gets tons of visits from the CIA. But anyway, I brought him to Hope, and his talk is one of the most popular talks ever downloaded from the archives because it's fascinating shit. I want anybody to email us feedback@hope.net. Who do you want us to bring to Hope?
That makes
we will try.
Sense. That makes that a lot of
a
sense.
Idea.
You know what? You know what? Let's try.
But it has to be somebody with the just ridiculous chutzpah like me to go and reach out to these people and social engineer them into coming.
Well, if you want chutzpah, you came to the right place because every hacker is a chutzpah. Every single one of them.
So the radio time machine, we're gonna be pretty soon we'll be able to listen to, well, we can now. Back to the Library of Congress story.
Oh.
So they go to David Gorin and Thomas Witherspoon, both of them were speakers this year here at Hope. They go to the Library of Congress. And the other people are talking about art, like recordings of radio stations, and we should save this recording. But they were trying to convey to them the concept of recording spectrum as
rather
opposed to a single radio
channel.
They couldn't wrap their minds around it. It was a concept. You got to admit, it's a hard concept for some people to grasp because you're a radio geek. You get it.
Right. So multi-tracking was not on the... anywhere in
their imagination. They didn't understand the concept.
But they understood
the Library of Concept.
Tuning in and recording.
They spent like almost all their time there that they were allotted to to explaining how this works. And they were like, they couldn't just wrap their mind around it.
And yet in business you get the exact opposite thing where, hey, I have a magic box. Do it! It's magic!
They just didn't understand how it worked. And the added value of not that you're just recording a bunch of radio stations, but the context of all of them at the same time that you could tune around later.
Plus,
and
you're
hear...
off channels because you're dealing with white space. Some people like to sneak in underneath.
Maybe.
Have alternate programming coming in.
So, anyhow, they eventually got them interested in their Library of Congress is going to start participating in this Radio Time Machine project, too. This is like big shit that's happening, and we're documenting it early on here at Hope.
Would they be interested in a resume?
Recipe?
Resume? CV?
Oh, whose resume?
Oh, anybody's.
Oh, you guys.
Hypothetically,
I don't
speaking.
Know. We'll talk to Thomas. After his talk tomorrow, talk to Thomas and tell him you're interested in getting the contacts
from the
Library of Congress.
Because this sounds fantastic.
Maybe they could have some radio geeks helping with this project.
I think
they're just looking for people to donate stuff. They're not going to do it themselves.
We might have actually some material because we, you know, as we're growing,
I suggest that the entire archives of Radio Statler be donated to the United States Library of Congress.
Whoa, hold on.
You remember when Twitter?
Yeehaw.
You remember Twitter donated all the tweets?
Yep.
And they took them?
Yeah.
What is Radio Statler chopped liver? It's far more entertaining than Twitter. Ladies, sometimes.
Especially old Twitter. Old Twitter was pretty bland.
Oh, this is worth thinking about. Folks, if you
Archive for Prosperity.
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 Okay,
what's that's
posterity.
Posterity. Posterity.
Posteriority.
Posterior.
Posteriority.
Radio posterior.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard it here. The gauntlet has been thrown.
The challenge.
The challenge.
Get the Library of Congress to archive
Radio Statler's
entire archives. It's far more significant to humankind than Twitter.
Do you realize that one of these days we're going to be archaeological artifacts of hackerdom?
That's a bit disturbing.
That's a bit disturbing, but we are at the vanguard, ladies and gentlemen. The time is now. Ow.
Speaking of archaeological stuff, check this out.
And now Mr. Bernie comes across the room in order to show this. Oh my god, yes.
Okay. You know why she can't stay at Hope tomorrow?
She's got school, doesn't she? And she's heading off to paleography.
Yep.
Yep.
Wow.
For the record, for the
paleontology.
For the record, this is a picture of a young person who was a babe, and I repeat, a babe, just a young child. Early on, about 10 years ago, and now we have youngsters.
Oh, you're talking about the mom. What do you mean? Why? You can't use past tense.
No, but youngster now.
Yes.
Vis-a-vis, you know, being a newborn
now,
just a few years ago.
Not so young later.
The new hacker generation is coming forward.
What is cool? Her name is Izzy.
Yep.
And she's going to be doing a gig tomorrow. So I really like, what are you going to take up? And I'm like, so I asked her mom. What's your mom's name?
Oh. I just point to her in the security desk.
Anyway, I know, it's late, I can't think. Anyway,
names, faces,
I
why
said,
you
the
it?
Best thing she digs up, I want you to send me a picture of the best thing she digs up this weekend. So, see what it is.
There's the family. That's the logical family.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
So that's a lucky daughter. She gets to go and dig stuff up.
Yeah.
Ah, but you have to keep proper records. You have to be able to measure.
I have to urinate. Well. I have a good Hope story about urinating.
I don't think...
No, it's a really good story. So,
I'll tell you what. This will be a good time to take a break and...
And urinate? But before I do, too. I got to tell the urination story.
Tell your urination
story.
$300 to stop
Beyond Hope. I haven't told this publicly ever. At Beyond Hope, which is the only Hope that was not held at Hotel Pennsylvania. Did you go to the Beyond Hope? It was at the Puck Building. You know where the Puck Building is? You know where the Puck Building
yes,
is.
Yes, yes, I right. do. I've worked
so
there.
So it was... That was in 97.
It's a lot more interesting on the outside than it is on the inside.
So, we had a panel of federal convicts, myself and Fiber Optic, Mark Abene. Now, we were both on federal supervised release at the time. We had been released. Now, to explain to the listeners, the millions of listeners who are out there listening to us right now on Radio Statler, what supervised release is. In around 1986, during the Reagan administration and before, there was federal parole. Parole, difference between probation and parole, is probation is you don't do jail time, you just like a suspended sentence kind of a thing. Parole is you serve a certain amount of time, but you're released early and you serve the rest of your sentence out in the free world, but under strict conditions. During the Reagan war on crime and the war on drugs, just say no, all that stuff, and crack babies and all the freaking out about shit, there was this, every politician was climbing over each other's asses in Congress to be tougher and tougher on crime. We got to abolish parole. So they abolished federal parole. So everybody who was sentenced from then on in federal court, criminal court, would serve the entirety of their sentence with no time off.
Hmm.
No parole. But they had all these federal parole agents. What do you do with them? All right. We'll come up with supervised release, which means, which this is a big ripoff. You serve your entire sentence, but we will add on to that several years of supervised release, which are like parole-like conditions. Even though you serve your whole freaking sentence, you get to serve more years under supervised release, which is really tough shit.
So punishment on top of the punishment once the punishment's been served.
Yes. So at the time, obviously, I had just been released from federal prison, and Mark Abeni had also, and fiber optic. So one of the standard conditions of federal supervised release is you will have no contact with any felon.
I see where this is going.
So, and Emmanuel wanted to have a panel, like us two comparing stories on stage. I'm like, well, we can't do it. It's like, why not? Because it's a condition of federal supervised release, and we could both go back to federal prison for having any interaction with each other. Even though our had nothing to do with each other's offenses. But anyway, I'm like, aha.
The semblance of recidivism.
And in the hacker spirit, I came up with a good hack. Do you remember Jerry Adams from the IRA?
Yes.
Spokesman of the IRA.
Yes, yes, yes.
And how the British government made it illegal for any broadcast entity in the UK to broadcast his voice.
Yes.
It was illegal.
Yeah.
To broadcast Jerry Adams' voice, either TV, radio, no, you could not have his voice because he's a IRA terrorist. Can't have that. They don't have a First Amendment in UK, so they could get away with that. You couldn't do that here.
But they do try. So, watch out, folks.
But it caused this ridiculous miming solution. The British press, like, all right, they won't broadcast his voice. They would have journalists or other people lip sync his actual words on TV. So there'd be Jerry Adams talking, but it'd be somebody else's voice coming up. But it was, you know.
You know, this is like having,
they overdubbed him.
They overdubbed him with somebody else's voice. It was his, what he was saying, but they got around the British law because it wasn't his voice. Even it was his words. So, I thought that was brilliant. So I'm like, I got it. It's the Jerry Adams solution, in a way. We won't be doing the lip syncing because that would be far too entertaining, like Milli Vanilli. But
it would be era appropriate.
But like, here's where we're gonna do it. I'm like, Emmanuel, you sit in the middle of the stage, at the table, you know, like this, and we put up foam board barriers,
just partitions
on either side of Emmanuel, like he's in a cubicle.
Contestant number one, what do you think about contestant number two?
And this is on video somewhere, so I couldn't see fiber optic, Mark Abeni, and he couldn't see me. And we couldn't talk to each other. But we could talk to Emmanuel.
And Emmanuel would act as relay.
And like, you know, I would say something like, I wonder what the conditions were like in fiber optic's federal prison compared to mine. Mine were like this. And controlled movement and these kinds of things. And I would ask Emmanuel that, and Emmanuel would say, it's funny you should ask. I was just wondering the same thing and thinking about asking Mark what conditions he had in his prison and what they were like. And then Mark would say that, not talking to, not addressing me.
Of course.
And not seeing me. And we just did this back and forth for an hour. And I'm like, this is a great hack. We hacked the conditions. But the urination comes in. So I didn't want to stop and go to the bathroom. I had to really pee because I've been drinking a lot of alcohol. No, not alcohol. I wasn't even drinking. I think I was just drinking water. It was hot.
But
it was in the summertime. Whatever I was drinking.
Whatever the reason was.
I had to pee.
Sure.
And somebody had given me a big bottle of apple juice, which I drank, and I wanted to be sober during the talk, so I drank the apple juice, and I don't want to go to the bathroom in the middle of this panel. It was it was like this. We're on a roll here. This is fascinating stuff. So I emptied the apple juice container, and I'm sitting. You know, at the front of the stage table has a skirt. So I unzipped. It was one of these wide mouth apple juice jars, and I just had to fill it on stage, looking at the whole audience while I'm talking, filling a bottle in real time. So if you watch this, if you watch this panel, see if you can determine from my when I'm talking the exact moment where I whip it out on stage and emptying my urine into a bottle on stage while I'm talking. It's almost like the ventriloquist, like gargling while they're doing the, you know, it's like it's like walking and chewing gum at the same time.
Gargling,
urinating and talking.
In this context,
well, urinating and talking is easier, but urinating on stage and keeping a straight face is a challenge.
that I think that challenge is
now. You can go back and watch the video. See if you can determine the time window. I don't know how long does it take to fill a bottle with urine.
About
half a minute. I don't know. It gets longer as you get older, but literally and figuratively. But anyway, the.
Highbrow class for a
so
program.
Has any other Hope speaker ever urinated on stage? We had something similar with Jello Biafra, who whipped it out and mooned everybody with his balls hanging out on stage. You remember that?
I believe I was in the audience that year.
Yeah. Yes. In a protest to the FBI agents in the audience. But I believe I may well be, and Emmanuel will probably kick me off the speakers committee for talking about this, but damn it.
You know
which
what?
Year was that?
The statute of limitations should be
2002?
Over by now.
This was more
than 20 years ago.
I believe that's just a simple misdemeanor at this point.
It's 2008 now. 2018.
Yeah, so well past the statute of limitations.
But Emmanuel has no statute of limitations. So.
Oh, and there's no forgiveness either.
So, but anyway, so then after the talk was over, like I said, this bottle here, there was a volunteer like clearing off. It was like, can you toss this bottle out for me? I'm like, he's like, okay. And so somebody kindly tossed out the bottle, not knowing
what
that
the
it was not.
Were, of course.
I hope they didn't drink it. Anyway, they didn't know. It looked like apple juice in the bottle. It was the perfect disguise. Now, was that a hack? Or what?
That was a hack of desperation.
It was.
And
when you're in federal prison, you learn that necessity is the mother of invention. Oh, you found it.
I found the video.
Boy, you're good. Look, there's the barriers we set.
Yep.
There's the barrier between us. This is great.
Oh, boy.
Now, the video quality is obviously not... Yeah, it's...
You may not be able to see the relief on my face
as
I drain my lizard.
It looks like it was taken from an old VHS tape and then digitized. But actually, let's see. We've got...
That's Mark.
Yeah, there's Mark. We've got a nice close-up of him for quite a while here.
Probably completely oblivious of this until this very day.
I told a few friends in the community, but I didn't. I remember publicly. There I am. Boy, look at me. I got weird. Boy.
Oh,
just
so
strange.
Young. So young.
And it was only yesterday.
This was 21 years ago.
The lights wash everyone out. The lights kind of wash everything out.
So when can we determine the precise moment in the YouTube video of when I take the bottle and hold it under? I take the bottle off the stage and put it under. And then put it back.
Oh,
like, wait a minute. The bottle was empty at first. And then it's full. How did he do this magic trick?
Gee, I wonder why.
It's almost like pulling a rabbit out of a hat.
Whoa. Good night, everybody.
Well, let's see.
Is the bottle there?
I think that's the bottle.
Okay.
And we're at about an hour 36 minutes in.
Speaking of, what's that bottle right there? It looks suspicious. The contents.
The Jefferson Malort.
Is that the original contents?
That seems to be Malort.
And it is to be used sparingly. It is still capped. The
it looks like it's still
there.
Sealed. So
yes. So we're going to leave that.
So
there.
On that note,
on the other hand, I don't have an apple juice bottle, and I've already spilt my coffee. So if you'll excuse me, I've...
All of this talk of urination is making me want to pee.
Yes, and
so
if you want
to... Do we have anything to use as an interstitial?
Not that I'm aware of, but what we will
do is we will now start with the open mic.
Do we have an audio cable somewhere over there? What kind of audio cable are we looking for?
That would go into the board.
The kind that would go into...
Like maybe this.
I believe that would be it. Yes, oh, man, that appears to go in. Oh, and I haven't finished my slides yet.
I have to say goodnight after I pee. So I want to say goodnight.
Good night.
And
from New York, live. Or what's
you're in New York.
You're in New York.
Thanks.
You have a good one.
All right, I'm definitely going to have to cut out at this point because, like I said, if I don't have those slides done, I think there's about 250 people in Richie who are going to lynch me.
Help them out anyway.
So while you queue up,
in general,
prepare.
No, people didn't really ask me to.
So, bringing to you from 1997, the prisoners panel.
Because of the restrictions.
From Beyond Hope.
He does get everything.
Enjoy.
Now, I believe we have some